It's All Things Considered on WNYC. I'm Sean Carlson. Next week marks the start of baseball season here in New York. It also marks the end of budget season in Albany. The state's fiscal year starts April 1st, meaning elected officials need to come together before then to put together a spending plan that will touch nearly every aspect of New Yorkers' lives: schools, housing, public safety. And even though Democrats run the state capitol, there are still differences to be worked out between Governor Kathy Hochul and the state legislature. So we're joined by one of the key figures in budget negotiations, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins. She represents Yonkers and much of the western portion of Westchester County. Senator, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's good to be with you.
Early this month, the Senate passed the One House budget to serve as a counterpoint to Governor Hochul's budget. Can you tell us what it is and why the Senate did it?
Well, we do it every year. It's part of the ritual. The governor presents their budget. After we have hearings with different state agencies and talk to stakeholders, then we construct a budget. We are limited to the extent that we can add a whole lot. I mean, it's her budget, but we could certainly look at what we like, what we don't like, and pass a budget just as the assembly does that reflects the things that we care about. So I'm happy to say we are all pretty much rowing in the same direction. And it's just a matter of, what we can do in those spaces, how much can be done in those spaces, and what may be the best ways to approach some of these issues.
Let's talk about housing. A big plan that the governor has would be to create 800,000 new housing units over the next decade. In certain circumstances, though, it would let the state override local decisions on where to locate housing complexes. The Senate rejected that plan in its One House budget. Why was that?
Well, we agree that we need more housing. We also know that we need more affordable housing everywhere. And we also know that when you just tell someone, for example, in February, that there's a likelihood that your local jurisdiction will be overridden, people don't take the message well. So for us, we've talked about supporting the initiatives in terms of housing, but we've approached it more with the carrot. We've increased the amount of money that would be available with municipalities. We have not endorsed any overriding of local jurisdiction. A lot of times people say, well, you know, how resistant communities are to affordable housing, or they're resistant to this kind of housing and that kind of housing. And I always remind them that the governor's proposal, frankly, didn't talk about what kind of housing. It's just any kind of housing. There is some incentive that her plan proposes for affordable housing. You get two credits instead of one. But the emphasis, frankly, is in generally building housing. So I think it's a conversation that needs to be had, but I do believe that we can get to a point where it's more collaborative, a little more encouragement to do the right thing. And as I said to the governor, I mean, it's not that I'm opposed to a stick. I don't want to start with a stick.
So, in fact, there was a piece in The New York Times about this earlier this week. Mara Gay criticized your proposal. She said that there is solid evidence from other states that incentive alone will not result in more housing, and then goes on to say that, like you were saying, wealthy towns prefer to keep their exclusionary zoning policies rather than receive funds from the state to build housing. So how can we move forward?
You know, and I'll go back to what I said. I think that, you know, you start having with a conversation, but that's just always been my approach. I was on with another broadcaster, and one of the things he said is like, well, you remember how Yonkers had to actually, you know, be told by the federal government, so on and so forth. But I said, again, that was a desegregation case. I am in government because of my involvement in that desegregation case. I understand people's resistance to a lot of things. But again, I think everyone knows that we need housing, and every community I represent is concerned about the lack of affordability. Most of them don't believe that their kids are going to be able to come back and actually you know, buy a home in the community where they've grown up because the housing prices have gotten so high, rentals are so high. So I think everybody understands that we need more stock. We need more stock that can accommodate a variety of incomes, and we need to make a plan to move forward.
Let's move on to taxes here. The governor has made clear that she does not want to raise income taxes. Both the Senate and Assembly want to raise taxes on the rich. Are lawmakers willing to band together to push the governor on that? And is there concern that that could scare away wealthy New Yorkers from the state?
Well, again, we are trying still to recover from the pandemic. And part of what we said, all of us said, in the pandemic, it was all of the inequities, all of the things that we should do as a state that is progressive. There are things that we should do, and those things need to be sustained. I'm very happy that the governor has continued in terms of the education funding. It was a long time coming, but we have a lot that we are still trying to do. We're trying to lift the wages of our home care workers who take care of so many of our most fragile elderly and others who really depend on them, and their wages are so very, very low. We're trying to make sure that universal pre-K is available throughout the state. And these things have to be sustained. So there are things that are, frankly, the infrastructure of our state that not only allows for more safety, but also helps build the economy. And those who are doing extremely well and who were in our one house in terms of having a slight increase, we're just asking them to do a little more because there are important things that I think if we sustain, we will be a much better society and certainly a better state.
We wanted to ask you before we let you go, Senator, about the state public campaign finance program. Now, that was in all three budget proposals. Advocates say it could act as a counterweight to the outsized role that wealthy donors play in state politics. There were reports recently about money from our former mayor, Mike Bloomberg, to the tune of millions of dollars
exactly.
Going to the governor. So do we think that the program will remain?
I just got two more flyers telling me to call me about our budget.
So to that end, is this program going to remain on schedule and on budget? And if it doesn't, what kind of message does that send to voters?
Well, I mean, again, as you said, we all put it into our budget. So we have a commitment to campaign finance reform. I think our reality, though, is the other part that you said, that people like, Mayor Bloomberg or any other number of people also can flood mailboxes, airways, or whatever as independent expenditures that have very little boundaries. And that's part of what the public financing changes were, to create more involvement on the district level, on the grassroots level, so that people, although they may be flooded by outside influences, have some connection with the representative that they're expected to vote for and who they expect also to represent their views and to actually talk to them. So we are supportive of it going forward. And we understand that it is unfortunately still a world where a lot of outside influences can help shape opinions.
New York State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins. Senator, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been nice to talk to you.